You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
And welcome back to another edition of the Underdog Dynasty Podcast, AAC edition. My name's Dan Morrison. That's Emily Van Buskirk. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm back home after a very long travel weekend. So I'm glad to be back.
Absolutely. All right. We are doing our week two in review today. We're going to go back and look at the games as they went down. A little bit better of a week, I'd say, for the American overall than week one was, but still there's room for improvement still, I think, for the conference. There was a couple of games that didn't quite break the right way, but you know, that's how it goes sometimes. We're just going to run through all these games here in order when they kicked off. And that for me means we're starting at South Carolina 20, ECU 17. ECU should have won this game by multiple scores.
They were winning for a while, right?
Yeah, the very first play of the game, Tyler Snead on a trick play threw like a 75-yard touchdown pass.
Oh, that's awesome.
The Pirates had momentum. The defense played great. It was the best defensive game that I've seen them play in absolutely years. It was much improved defense. The running game was solid. Holton Ehlers was terrible. He was, as the guy who is now a senior, he's been starting for, he started starting his freshman year. He wasn't there the whole year as a starter, but he's essentially a four-year starter at this point. He needs to, and it's not going to happen, I don't think, he needs to get rid of the little mistakes and, take that next step forward. Unfortunately, he was doing things like at one point there was like a third and four and he ran 3 yards downfield, had a first down, had another 5 yards running if he wanted it, and he threw the ball and got himself a penalty for it,
So do you think it's just his decision-making is not
I think he's
looking
just,
good?
He's not comfortable. I don't think that... I think in the pocket, he's uncomfortable. And I think the game moves too fast for him sometimes. I think his processing speed isn't quite where it needs to be. And I don't think it's one of those things that, when he's a sophomore, you go, well, there's a lot of potential there.
Right.
We'll figure it out. But now there's a senior going, well, he just never figured that part of the game out. Because he does have the physical tools. I also think they need to run him a lot more because he looks more comfortable and confident when he has that as part of his game. But as it stands now, they lost that game, and they lost it because they were given several short fields, several turnovers, and they could do almost nothing with it on offense, which is the exact opposite of what we expected the Pirates to be like this year.
Yeah.
So for me, that was a very disappointing loss.
I want to preface this podcast with that I didn't get to see too many of the games because I was at Oregon, Ohio State, and it was right in the middle of the day. So I didn't get to watch too many. I saw highlights and whatnot, but just looking at the numbers, and then I was able to keep track of the score. So every time I would check in on an AAC team, I was like, oh, okay, this is going well. I feel like
so much better.
Well, I feel like it's still, there's something to be said. Obviously it's bittersweet because you lose by three. That's rough, but there had to have been some good things about the game
Absolutely. Let me be positive here. The defense was phenomenal for ECU.
Right. You said that. Yeah. So their that's good because that was a excellent. Concern.
It was, they looked really good. Blitzing, they looked really good. Pressuring South Carolina's quarterback, which is not something that I thought that ECU was going to have a ton of success doing this year. Their secondary was really solid throughout the game. What really happened was ECU jumped out to like a 14-0 lead.
Right.
And they just, by the fourth quarter, the defense was on the field so long, they just couldn't hang on at the end. And South Carolina was just the stronger team by the end of the game. They had a little bit, they're the legs under them still. But
I feel like it's encouraging to see them play a game like that against a team like South Carolina, because while South Carolina is not great by any standards, it's still a major conference team. So anytime that you can play with a team like that, I feel like it's a good thing. Obviously, there's stuff to be worked on, but I feel like ACU's like upward, you know, so that's at least.
Yeah, no, there's hopeful. Again, they're still doing this thing where they show signs of growth and they just can't go and actually win the game. It's not showing up in the wins loss column. And that's the frustrating thing for ECU right now.
I'm sure that's tough.
Yeah. Another team that I thought, you know, showed a lot of improvement from week one to week two was Tulsa. They went to Oklahoma State, Tulsa 23, Oklahoma State 28. Yeah, they lost the game, but the, you know, week one was terrible for Tulsa. Mm-hmm. Week two was a much improved team out there. You know, Davis Brandon was solid. He was a lot better than he was against UC Davis. The secondary really gave Spencer Sanders, the Oklahoma State quarterback, a hard time. Mm-hmm. The difference in this game was that the running game wasn't there the way it was against UC Davis. They weren't, you know, so they really need to find a complete team effort. You know, they go to Ohio State next week, and that's not fun for anyone. Don't get me wrong. Like,
I feel bad for them because Ohio State is going to be so mad.
Oh, yeah. Ohio State's going to be looking to prove a point, which sucks for Tulsa.
It does. Timing-wise, it's not great.
No, it's not. But in general, I think going forward, what they have to look for is finding a way to do everything well at once instead of just like, today's the day Brent has a good day throwing, or today's the day that we, you know, have everyone average 10 yards on the ground. You need to be able to do everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh God, I'm seeing a trend here where these AAC teams are up in, you know, heading into the end of the game, and they just can't hold on to that lead.
Yeah, it felt similar, at least to the way the Tulsa Oklahoma State game went last year, where you thought, man, Tulsa really has this shot to do it, but they just couldn't hold on. They couldn't, you know, maintain it for 60 minutes. They couldn't get the job done at the end of the day, which, you know, again, I was concerned that this was going to be a blowout after the way Tulsa looked week one. So good on them to keep it close. But this was still a little bit frustrating, that where you think that, man, they really could have won that game.
I think the biggest stat for me that was like concerning for their offense was just the 4 third down conversions out of 13. That's just like something you can't.
That's tough.
You're going to have to remedy that. Yeah.
And part of that's that running game not really getting going against Oklahoma State, because that means you're in third and long a lot. It's not just third and two where you've got options, you know.
Third down conversions to me are one of my favorite stats to look at, because yes, they're situational. Like you just said, they could be because you're not getting your running game going. They could be because, you know, your quarterback isn't able to complete passes, but it's also like a grit thing. You know, it's like a character building down. And so you like to see teams overcome that. So hopefully they can work on that for next week.
Absolutely. Our next game, another AAC loss, Florida 42, USF 20. USF played a lot better than I thought they were going to be.
That's good.
You know,
okay.
Cade Forden showed improvement from what he showed last week. They still went with Jimmy McLean a bit as well. They don't know who their quarterback is. They should never really announce Cade Forden's the guy with all the graphics and everything, because it's clear that he's the starter, but they're still trying to figure it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The defense forced a few turnovers. It's not really related to USF, but Emory Jones kind of stinks, it seems. Mm-hmm. And at least he's got no confidence right now. And USF was in his head the same way FAU was kind of in his head. When Anthony Richardson was in the game, USF had no answer on defense, but you know.
Right.
So I'm not sure what the Gators are doing with their quarterback situation. It doesn't feel like a controversy to me, but
yeah.
But no, USF showed a lot of improvement. They showed an ability to move the ball in spurts, which they did not show against NC State. They, like I said, they showed the ability to create a little bit of havoc, creating turnovers. That's all good stuff, improvement from week one to week two. But still, tough game.
At least they, you know, you come out in the second half trailing by 32 and you don't roll over and die. At least they had some fight, and it sounded like that's covered. It sounded like that's what head coach Jeff Scott was focusing on, is that they came out, you know, they were able to at least put points on the board and look alive instead of rolling over. So I think that's really all you take away from that. You just kind of move forward.
Exactly. They've got a FAMU next week, Florida A&M. Got to win that game. Nice. That's an, you know, FCS team coming to town. Win that game and kind of let that be your reset button on the season, and kind of move into the start of conference play. And not too long after that, I think they'll have BYU before conference play still, but you know what I mean? Oof. But kind of like get the wheels in motion before conference play.
I was surprised that BYU beat Utah, by the way.
Oh, I was too. BYU is a lot better than I thought.
I hate that. I hate that for college football. I hate it so much. You don't like
you like Utah.
Utah is like the, like, I don't know how to explain this, but they'd be like the good guy in all the movies, right? Like the Bruce Willis, if you will. And BYU is the villain always. So anytime I see them win, I'm like, no.
BYU has got a little bit of an attitude to them since for a while now. But hey, you know, we're not quite at the Big 12 yet, are we? No. Let's get a couple of quick wins in here for the conference.
Let's do it.
Morgan State 22, Lane 69.
Yeah. 69 points. Yes.
That's the most in the Willie Fritz era, Tulane. You know, big number.
We love that.
Big number. Great number. We all love it. You know, a lot of backups in this game. Not much to say other than they took care of business, I don't think. You know, did you have anything special about it other than, you know?
No, I tried to watch this. This is one of the games I did try to watch because, you know, I love to watch Tulane. I wanted to see how they were going to adjust after Oklahoma. And then also just their whole story I've been following because they're, you know, at UAB, and I wanted to watch it. And I couldn't even get a stream of this, like, at all. So I was very frustrated.
That was probably an ESPN Plus game.
And there was no stats. So I like follow the stats when I'm at other games, no stats being recorded. So I didn't really get to see any of it. I saw the final score and I was like, okay, that sounds about right. Other than that, you know, I'm sure it was just a learning game for them. They got to get reps for guys that don't normally get reps. So that's good heading into the rest of the season. So.
Yeah, exactly. Murray State 7, Cincinnati 42, the Bearcats came out with a Big 12 flag instead of an American flag. Which was,
are you serious?
Yep, they did.
Wow. And just leaning all the way in.
And then they went into halftime 7-7 against Murray State. They came out slow.
See,
they came out distracted. You know, they obviously got their focus together in the second half and, you know, 142-7, but the offense.
Are you surprised that Luke Fickell let them do that? Do you think that that was
I don't know that it was necessarily Luke Fickell's call about what flag they ran out with.
Well, I'm sure he could be like, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah,
it seems like a little bit of a dick move.
But if the athletic director kind of goes, we want to like wave the flag around, like make a point that we got in, you kind of,
he could be like, yeah, maybe that's not a good idea. And
well, I think he probably, yeah, no, I
don't love that. I don't love that for Cincinnati.
No, it was kind of a silly move to do a couple years before you left. But I also get where they're coming from with the excitement of it this weekend and everything. I think the thing I'm more, you know, more surprised Luke Fickell let happen was it be 7-7 at the half and not have the guys focus to, you know, right from the get-go. Because Murray State's not a team that should have hung around for any amount of time, obviously.
What did they do better than Cincinnati? I mean, I'm curious how that happened.
To me, it was just lack of focus on the defense for Cincinnati was great the whole game. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I thought the offense was kind of just sleepwalking for the first half though.
Interesting.
You know, just one of those games where you expect to win big and you're a little bit vanilla. You kind of like go through the motions a little bit too long. And then,
you look to Desmond Ritter to be a leader in that kind of situation. So that's kind of surprising to me that he didn't like step up and push them.
And, you know, by the second half, they all were stepping up with that kind of thing. But the first half, it was just, like I said, it was just a sleepwalking first half. I don't think there's anything too deep to read into it overall, though. You know, moving on, Temple 45, Akron 24.
Yes, Temple getting a win.
Yeah, they got a pretty good sized win, too. They didn't struggle against Akron at all, which they needed. You know, after the way that Rutgers game went down, they needed to get a game.
And Temple getting the defensive player of the week in William, I can't even say his last name, I don't know how to say it, but linebacker from Temple getting defensive player of the week. We love that.
Absolutely. I don't know what Dewan Mathis's injury status is right now, but Justin Lynch looked excellent.
Good.
He was very accurate with the ball. I didn't write down from because
19 of 23 for 245 yards.
Exactly. I try not to read box scores too much because I know I can make it a habit of just reading off everyone's stats. And that's just not,
I mean, those kind of stats are important, especially for a guy that's stepping in, you know, like that's crazy.
Absolutely. He had a great game. Randall, very accurate. The wide receiver, had an excellent game too. Mm-hmm. He had like 170 yards receiving. So, you know, they had it was a very, very good day for that offense. I'd still like to see a little bit more physicality out of Temple overall, just get back to that kind of Temple tough way. But, you know, it is, you know, it's a,
well, they sacked the quarterback on the other team. It looks like at least twice, possibly more.
Yeah. Akron's offensive line is not great.
Yeah. But at least they're bringing it to it. You know, we love to see that physicality.
Absolutely. They had a very good second half as well. The first half was not, they had the lead the whole first half really, yeah. But the second half is when they kind of broke it open a bit.
Two defensive scores for the Owls, and they limited the Zips to 10 points through the final three quarters. So
yep.
Yay, Temple.
Good day for the Owls.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Bad day for the midshipmen, Air Force 23, Navy 3. We can talk about what happened on the field in a second. But there's a really weird situation there. Ivan Jasper, their offensive coordinator, has been there for like 14, 15 years.
Oh, I read about this
morning. Fired immediately after the game.
Yeah.
But it was not Kenny Omotalolo's call. It was the AD, Chet Glatchik's call. And I was surprised to hear that Kenny Omotalolo stepped in and retained Jasper as the quarterback's coach. But
yeah,
the AD is insisting he's not the OC anymore. There's very few people who know the triple option offense better than Ivan Jasper.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a good move to fire him if you're trying to improve the offense midseason at Navy. And I think I want to know what you think, because I think that means that there's a lot of institutional uncertainty mm-hmm. about the future of Ken. Because when you look at Neil Matalolo, he's been there 14 years. He's been excellent for 14 years.
Yeah.
But the past 4 or 5 years, if he hasn't had a kind of generational quarterback, it's been really tough sledding on that team. And I want to know, do you think that this is a sign that maybe there's going to be a little bit of a push on him this year? It's
really unfortunate because it's so hard to recruit to service academies, you know?
Absolutely.
First and foremost, that's like the hardest thing. And then you look at his record. He's such a respected coach. It's such a weird move to have an AD get involved. Like, I've never even heard of that. You know, like I've never
telling
seen that.
Them who we can and can't have on.
Yeah. This and staff. Go yeah. ahead and like getting rid of this. And then the second game into the season, I mean, like, I've heard of head coaches being fired. USC does it all the time, yeah. But like.
Yeah. Southern Miss last year after like week one, they fired their coach. You know what I mean? Like it happens. Yeah.
But a coordinator, I feel like it's a lot more rare that early on. Like you do see it.
Yeah. Yeah, the idea is that you're going to be completely changing the scheme or something. Like after week two, it's not a smart move, but that's what happens when you've got an administrator interfering with the program.
It's so weird.
No, don't get me wrong. Only scoring 3 points against Air Force, the team who you absolutely hate, and you know is one of the two teams that you can most accurately judge yourself against in the country, because they are another military academy with the same kind of, you know, entrance standards as you. Well, it's not good. You know, Xavier Arline was the leading rusher with 31 yards. That's not good. They're still kind of balancing out between two different quarterbacks, because Arline absolutely cannot throw when they come from behind. He just does not have that in his repertoire of skills. I still think he's their best threat as a running option in that triple option, but man, it doesn't work. It's not working right now.
What's so weird to me is that you have the AD who relieves this guy of his position, but then, you know, Coach Ken asked him to reconsider, citing everything that Jasper's done for the program.
Jasper's been around since like Paul Johnson's days at Georgia Southern. He's been around the triple option.
No, I understand that. But what I'm saying is it's weird that Glatchik made this call and then the head coach had to then go and say, you know, please reconsider. Was there no communication?
That's what it sounds like to me.
That's what's so weird. It's like, he just did it, didn't tell me when he was doing it. And then, you know, the head coach had to say, hey, hold on, I need to vouch for this guy and bring him back. That's the strangest series of events.
Which
I've
is
ever
why it sounds like the Glatchik, the athletic director, was just angry about how.
Yeah. Like it was like a reaction.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's very dangerous for the whole program as a whole. If you've got an athletic director who's like lashing out and making decisions kind of, you know, off the cuff like that.
Yeah. Well, and apparently an offensive assistant was also fired.
That was a little bit different. I was
gonna say, for his refusal to get the COVID-19 vaccine, but still it's another
turnover there at all.
Yeah. This is crazy. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a institutionally, it's weird because Navy is almost always the most stable program.
Yeah.
And they're very unstable yeah. right now. And like an institutional like level within that program. You know, and we can talk about on the field, the offensive line still struggling to block at all. Mm-hmm. You know, the quarterback situation. I was thinking this offseason, Xavier Arline was going to take a step forward because I do love his running ability, but he isn't doing enough. You know, it's just the defense was fine. You know what I mean? 23 points isn't terrible. You know, Diego Fago looked good. The defense they did what they were supposed to do in this game, the way they did it against Marshall. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But the offense is just 10 points in two games is terrible. Not to defend Gladchuk's decision, but that is a really terrible start.
Yeah, hopefully they can get on track. You know, it's weird.
I agree. But I'm thinking that Navy might just be that for this year. You know, unless one of those quarterbacks magically turns into something they haven't been, you know.
Oh my goodness. So I know that we're talking AAC, but the USC just relieved their head coach. Speaking of people being relieved, Clay Helton has now been relieved.
I was hoping he'd be there forever.
Wow. This is crazy. So the athletic director, Mike Vaughn, informed Clay Helton of his decision to make a change in the leadership of the football program.
Yeah, that Stanford game was bad. It was really
I didn't, another game I didn't get to see, and you know, I'm a Stanford,
it was kind of funny, like Shaw, because you know how he took all that nonsense last week because of how the Kansas State game went. He had his like chain necklace and he was just like swagger on the Stanford sidelines.
First of all, Shaw has a no swagger. Don't ever say yes. That.
Oh, it was great. It was beautiful.
He does not.
I love it.
He does not. This was all his fault. If he had just named a starter, a true quarterback starter, then none of this stuff in K-State would have happened.
Probably.
100%.
It was like 42-13 late in that game. It was a much wider margin than it looked. That's sad for me, though, because I was hoping Notre Dame would be the one to take out Clay Helton. But
this is crazy. So they're going to conduct a national search for the new head coach over the next few months.
Wait for Luke Fickle's name to get thrown into that a lot. Because Mike Vaughn was the AD who hired Fickle at Cincinnati. So expect Fickle's name.
The interim head coach, Dante Williams, is going to be leading the team until then.
Would have thought they were kind of Graham Harrell, the OC, but whatever.
Wow, this is crazy. I'm sorry. This is happening right now. So anyways, moving on.
We got four more games to get through and we can talk all the USC you want.
No more. Just save us time.
We've got four more games. We've got four wins coming up here. Houston 44, Rice 7. Needed that for Dana. Could not let Rice hang around.
Yeah.
Dana needed that. Clayton Toon looked good. The whole offense looked, really good throughout the game, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Toon did have one play where he came up a little bit gimpy. He stayed in the game, kept playing through, but it almost looked like he had a slight hamstring thing going on, but not obviously enough to take him out. I'd keep an eye on that because running is a big part of his game.
Right. But
he played very, very well after a tough second half, at least against Texas Tech. The defense, I thought, did a great job creating chaos. They made Luke McCaffrey's time absolutely miserable, forced three interceptions, got into the backfield a lot. It was a very good day for them.
I guess their special teams did really well as well because their redshirt freshman, Manny Nunnery, best name ever, linebacker for Houston, was special teams player of the week for the American. He blocked two punts, one of which led to a Houston touchdown. He is one of three FBS players with two blocked kicks in a game this season. So love to see special teams.
Who else would have done two block kicks in game?
We have to go to NCAA stats, I love to see that.
Sidetracked mid podcast. it was a really, that's what Houston needed. You need to beat the teams that you're physically better than them. I thought they're physically better than Texas Tech too, but they didn't win that game. You're a lot physically better than Rice. And they did what they're supposed to, won the Bayou Bucket back. I've got nothing negative to say about Dana this week. So we'll give it another week and we'll see where we're at.
We'll see how they go.
I don't know who they got next week off the top of my head, but It'll definitely be a closer game unless it's
not. We'll talk about that in the other podcast.
That's exactly. I don't have to be prepared for that just yet.
There you go. Yeah.
Podcast.
We're not there yet.
Review, not preview.
Also, just to mention, Logan Hall, junior defensive tackle from Houston, was named Honor Roll Player of the Week. He had a team high 8 tackles, 2.5 for a loss, 0.5 a sack in the win. So.
Yeah, he was one of those guys chasing McCaffrey down all day long.
There you go.
Yep.
Logan Hall.
Absolutely. Bethune-Cookman 14, UCF 63. Not a ton to talk about here, to be honest with you. Just, it was a blowout the way it was supposed to be a blowout. Everyone looked good for UCF. The secondary, the youth still shows from time to time, but I think they're taking a lot of strides forward. There's a lot of good natural talent there. Just needs development. We saw some of that over the course of the game. The one interesting thing I would pay attention to from this game, and I don't know if you agree with this, UCF went forward on fourth down throughout the entire game when they were in field goal territory. They did not kick a field goal once. They didn't even try one.
Wow.
And there was a lot of fourth and tens from in field goal range where they were going for it. So I don't know. UCF had a lot of field goal issues last year with Daniel Obarski, the kicker. He was very inaccurate. I think Gus Malzahn probably doesn't trust him based on that. You know, considering it was an FCS opponent, you're going forward on fourth down a lot. But other than that, I don't think there was any major takeaways.
It seems like it was business as usual. Dylan Gabriel, was given honor roll AAC awards, 355 yards of total offense, 3 touchdowns. So it sounds like it was
just been a lot bigger too, because there's a few drops.
2 passing, 1 rushing. So it just sounds like it was normal. I'll be interested to see them play at Louisville. Yeah. I think I'm going to go to the game on Friday. And cover it, because I've been wanting to see Gus in person. So that'll be, in my opinion, a more interesting game.
And we'll talk about more at the preview, though. But that Louisville game is interesting. This is the last time UCF was there. Do you know what happened?
I do not.
2013, it was like number 7 Louisville's Charlie Strong, Teddy Bridgewater, Louisville.
Oh, wow.
UCF came back from 21-0 down, the same, similar to how they did against Boise State. But that was with Blake Bortles. It was a last-minute touchdown drive to win it. And that put them in the driver's seat for the Fiesta Bowl that year. So it's the first time they're playing since then. I'll be interested to see how things go.
But see, okay, so that's interesting for you because about that stuff. So, but do any of the actual players and coaches remember that? Or will that
it's
be
all different staffs and everything? Right. But I think it's an interesting note.
It is an interesting note for fans, but I'm curious if it'll even carry into any of the prep or the game.
It'll be mentioned in the pregame show, I'm sure. You know, maybe Scott Satterfield goes, you know what they did last time there in this house?
Okay, so, yeah, there you go.
And maybe some motivation thing like that. But no, it was just a fun little note. Memphis 55, Arkansas State 50. Business as usual for Memphis. This is who
so
they
many
are.
Points.
This is who Memphis is. Same old on the nothing new on Beale Street. I love it.
Yeah.
This is who they've been for the past 5 years at their best is a great offense and no defense. The secondary from Memphis got worked by 2 different quarterbacks in this game from Arkansas State. They both threw for like 250 plus yards. It was a long day for the defenses on both sides. With that being said, Seth Hennigan and Brandon Thomas, the running back quarterback combo for Memphis, they're both freshmen and they're going to be excellent there for a very, very long time. And that's going to be another layer of that great Memphis offense for the next 3-4 years. So I think that offensively they're all set. Don't have any concerns about the Tigers. I'm not convinced on the defense, and you know, but that, like I said about Memphis, that's kind of the, so what else is new?
Yeah, it seems I'm just shocked by, I guess I didn't even see this score because it looks, the numbers are higher than Ohio State, Oregon, which I didn't even think was possible because Ohio State put up 600 and something plus yards of offense, and this is even crazier. So
this game was absolutely insane.
It sounds like it.
This game kind of in a way remind me of UCF's game at Memphis last year, where it was like 50-49 as a final, and Dylan Gabriel like 600 yards passing in that game. And it was just one of those games where everyone is scoring so constantly and moving so easily that the defenses just didn't exist. It was like a walkthrough on offense.
Are you concerned that Memphis wins by 5?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Are you concerned that Memphis only wins by 5 in this game? Or?
I'm concerned they let up 50 points. If they won 35-30, I wouldn't worry about it.
Right.
But I'm concerned they let up 50 points. You know,
well,
I think that secondary's got a lot of issues that when they get to, say, playing SMU or UCF, I think those years they got exposed by Arkansas State. I think they're going to get really exposed when you get to one of the better AAC passing attacks.
Well, it's definitely something they'll be working on. Calvin Austin, the third senior wide receiver for Memphis. Oh,
he's excellent. Yeah.
Offensive player of the week for the AAC.
Deserved
six catches. Six catches for 239 yards.
Yeah.
The most by an NCAA FBS player in a game so far this season.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well deserved.
That's pretty impressive. Six catches for 239 yards. That's just efficient. Way to go, Austin.
Absolutely.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah,
no, right, last game.
Yeah, North Texas 12, SMU 35. North Texas early in this game for me was way too conservative. Seth Littrell got into, you know, like the 6-yard line and kicked a couple field goals, and he needed to understand. And I know this is like from the Conference USA point of view almost right away, but immediately he needed to understand that he was gonna have trouble keeping up with SMU in this game. It didn't work like that.
Yeah,
And that's unfortunate because, again, Seth Littrell as a coach 3-4 years ago was one of the hotter names, and now it just looks like he has fallen off the map.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate. It really is.
So it's like, how much of that was Mason Fine and how much of it was?
Oh, and how much of that was Graham Harrell as OC?
Right. Oh, that's true. Yeah, Graham Harrell. I keep forgetting he was there. Yep.
Yep.
I mean, surround yourself with good people makes you a good coach, but then you got to keep doing it. So
yeah, and that's a trick that you often get in the conference in the American, is where guys, you know, coaches come and go, OCs come and go. You need to always be able to replace well, you know, and you know, we've seen that at some schools where you just don't replace well and you get put into a position where you're gonna struggle going forward. Like I think Houston's done a very poor job replacing its coaches overall. You know, if you look at Major Applewhite, Tom Herman wasn't all that great a recruiter, you know, during his time either. You know, there's issues there that have led to them being below where they should be in terms of wins, losses, you know, but North Texas has certainly struggled in that same regard. SMU, as far as their day went, Ulysses Bentley was excellent. You know, no complaints. That's exactly what should be doing. Mordecai did throw a couple of interceptions, but he looked, you know, still very good for the most part.
Yeah.
I don't think there's much else to say about other than they were the dominant team and they did exactly what they're supposed to do.
Ulysses Bentley was the honor roll, you know, honors for AAC, rushed for 140 yards and a touchdown. You love to see that from a young running back, but I think it was more impressive that their other guy that got accolades this week was freshman safety Isaiah Nwokobia. I don't know if I said that right. He had 7 tackles with a sack and an interception all in that 35-12 win for freshman safety. That's
definitely good to start seeing from SMU because the defense has been their weak point.
Right.
They've been kind of like a variation of what Memphis is, which is, you know, 50 points, but 45 allowed. So if they can keep teams down to a smaller number as the season goes along, they're going to be incredibly difficult to manage.
So overall a better week for the AAC, although not an impressive slate of games. So it's kind of a push. Like, most teams did what they should. Some teams didn't, but it's better than the week
games.
Before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, it is what it is. It's early season. It's out of conference, you know.
Yeah.
Next week, we'll see how the conference looks. So there's a couple more intriguing out of conference games next week, I think. You know, like we mentioned, the UCF Louisville game. I think it'll be interesting to see what Tulsa does at Ohio State, if they can hold their own at all, you know.
I think Oregon laid out a pretty solid blueprint of how you stop them. So if they were paying attention to that film, which I'm sure they will be scouring, there's a breadcrumb trail to how to stop this Ohio State. And honestly, the biggest thing was Ryan Day's offensive quarter. I mean, I don't know what's going on with the game planning, but the running was the only thing working at one point. And then all of a sudden they're like, no, we're just going to force, you know, Stroud to keep throwing, which wasn't working. So
I think that's what happens when you've been losing the whole game. You're just trying to figure out a way to score points quickly because you're looking at the clock drain down.
But that's such a bad strategy when, like, that's the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over, expecting it to work. You have to be a better game manager than that. I put the Ohio State loss on the coaches, not the players at all.
But. Yeah, I mean, fair enough. I thought the defensive game plan was poor for Ohio State. You know, I thought that if you're Tulsa, you need to look at that and see, you know, what was it that Oregon did well. They did a really good job stretch runs, especially to the left side of the field. And I thought the RPO game gave their defense a lot of trouble. So I think if you're Tulsa, you need to lean heavy onto that type of thing going into next week. But again, for them, it's much more about being a full, well-rounded team than it is even necessarily winning the game, which I know sounds terrible because you always go to win the, you always are going to win, but realistically what you want to see from them is to play a full 60 minutes to play it well at every level of the field. But definitely a better week overall. You know, USC's got a new coach coming in. Like I said, that's, you never know. Crazy. Could be Luke Fickell. You never know.
Stanford beating USC is just such a Pac-12 thing, like such a meaningless victory for the conference, because you look at USC being ranked now, and maybe they shouldn't have been, obviously, because right. And that happens every year. So whatever, but Stanford unranked and probably going to lose to both UCLA and Oregon in the coming weeks. How is that helpful? You know, it's like, you're going to beat USC for what?
Well, I think what we all need to acknowledge is in the Pac-12, Oregon's going to lose to Washington this year for some reason.
No way. Not this year.
Washington's like one conference win.
No.
That's how that conference works.
No, not this. Oregon, I was not sold until I went to this and saw them in person. I really, really love this Oregon team. And it's not just like how they play, but CJ Verdell should be a Heisman contender. He's incredible. Mm-hmm. Their quarterback, Anthony Brown, his story is so incredible. Yeah. And the way that he leads the team is impressive. But the guys off the field, how they like each other and play for each other. Like, I love Mario Cristobal. He is a better version of Clay Helton. He's super nice, super like earnest, but actually good at coaching and like has a good game plan. So I really enjoyed this Oregon team, and I'm a little bit on the bandwagon now. Like, this might be the team that we see represent on the big stage. So we'll see.
You never know. Either way, for Washington, I do think we're headed towards another Crapple Cup.
I got some very interesting information from a guy who just left their staff, and I was talking to him because I was like, what is going on? You know, why is this happening? And he was like, look, they have not bought in to Jimmy Lake at all.
Really? And I was like, yeah, but because he was the DC.
I know. And everything I've heard from the coaches I know there is that they really, really like him, and it's been great, but it's his approach and personality, apparently, that this guy who worked there and doesn't work there anymore doesn't think the players or staff have really bought in, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not at all close to that, so I can't debate it necessarily, but that just surprises me.
And he's very different than Coach Peterson, which is fine, but every single staff member was retained from Peterson's staff.
Yeah, so it doesn't, that's what doesn't make sense to me, is he was a part of that staff. It's not like an The one thing is, like, I think the OC was an outside hire, but
it's just, it's not working. So, unfortunately, that's a bummer. But did you see the Texas A&M Colorado game?
Yes.
I picked Colorado to win that game.
Very sad that they didn't.
I know. That would have been a good one.
It would have been fun. There's a lot of good, fun games in a week that was really around the country, supposed to be kind of a boring week. People were talking about how, oh, it's going to stink.
No, it's crazy.
You know, Iowa State, that was, I was good this year. Not on offense, but I was good on defense.
Yeah.
But that's also, they're not that good on offense. That second half, but
it's a rivalry game. Like, you really can't take things, like, that's why I'm telling you about the Stanford USC game. Mm-hmm. That's a big rivalry for those two teams. So I never really take much stock out of it. Like, yes, it's great. Stanford won, I guess, but I'm not going to say, oh my God, Stanford's back. They're incredible now, because that's absolutely not true. They're going to go to Vanderbilt next weekend and watch them lose. Like, that very much could happen. So I'm not going to go there, but what about the Texas Arkansas game? Did you watch any of that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was ugly for Texas. That was funny. That was a funny game.
I was at a bar in downtown Columbus with all these like drunk Ohio State fans who were drowning their sorrows. And I look up at the TV and I was just like, is this a replay from like 1990? Like, what is this game?
It was so funny. Crazy. Texas got blown off both lines of scrimmage that whole game. It was great. A beautiful game. You know, and
that was fun.
Boston College 45, UMass 28. Got included.
All right. I paid attention to Boston College because that's where the quarterback at Oregon is from, Anthony Brown. So I kind of was like, I'm going to look a little bit about where he's from and stuff. So I got my eye on Boston College.
He was there when Steve Adazio was the coach too. So pay attention to Colorado State and see that beautiful coaching he got.
I like Colorado State. People sleep on them, but they're a fun program.
They're bad this year, though.
I mean, they're bad. They're always bad, but.
But no, but they like need to fire Steve Adazio bad.
Okay. What about Miami App State? That was interesting. That's my last.
See the cat?
I didn't know. I didn't get to see any of the game.
Okay. So there was a cat on the upper balcony that was dangling from like a string, right? And it fell from the upper balcony to lower balcony. And a bunch of like drunk Miami fans with an American flag, like try to catch it. Like they're firefighters with a trampoline in an old timey cartoon. The cat went like hit the ground through the thing because they like dropped the flag. But then the cat was okay though, because it's,
cat's always
but this guy picks up the cat and starts holding it like he's, you know, like it's Simba
Mufasa.
The cat just starts scratching the shit out of them. I've never seen an angry cat. I just have no idea how it got there.
That sounds like a pretty good summary of this week. And did you see the Florida State player who proposed to his girlfriend on the field after the game while the other team was celebrating?
Yeah, that was pretty
fun. I was like, if that doesn't sum up this weekend, then I'm not sure what does. So.
It was a great week too. You can find me at Dan_Morrison96.
And you can find me at MLNEM, EMILNEM on Twitter and Instagram.
Awesome. And see you for our previews for week 3.